Good to see you back this evening for this service. In the 11th verse of the book of Jude, Jude is discussing the false teachers and the characteristics of them. And in that discussion, in the New King James Version, it reads like this: "Woe unto them, for they have gone in the way of Cain, have run greedily in the area of Balaam for profit, and perished in the rebellion of Korah." He compares them to three Old Testament events. He said they went the way of Cain. Of course, we know the way of Cain. Then they went greatly after the era of Balaam, and we know that Balaam was willing to prophesy for money or do whatever. And then perished after rebellion of Korah. And I want to talk about the rebellion of Korah because that's one of those three that we may not talk about as much as to do the other. And I think there's some good lessons to be learned from the rebellion of Korah. Now the story of that rebellion is recorded in the Old Testament in Numbers, the 16th chapter. And in that 16th chapter of Numbers, and that's where we'll be doing a lot of our reading tonight, we'll be in that 16th chapter. We find out about Korah and his rebellion. Now, Korah was a cousin of Moses and Aaron. Korah was a Kohathite. He was both a descendant of Levi, and then also through Kohath. And being of that lineage, he again was of the same lineage of Aaron and Moses. They also not only were Levites, but also of the branch of the Levites known as the Kohathites. And very early on, the Kohathites were given a special service to perform in the area of the tabernacle. But to be a Kohathite was not to necessarily to be a priest, but it was to render service to the tabernacle. But Aaron was picked out as the branch through which the priestly group would be chosen and would follow. And so here you have cousins, and somebody said there's nothing like a family feud. And then you had cousins that were on the opposite sides of this this thing. And apparently, Korah, and not apparently he did, if you'll notice as we go along, didn't like the arrangement. And so he rebelled against Moses and against Aaron, and consequently he rebelled against God. And Moses was the one of the Kohathites had been chosen to lead Israel out of their bondage, and Aaron, his brother, was chosen to be the priestly arm of the Kohathites, and that is of Aaron and his family. But in this story, in the 16th chapter of Numbers, we find that Korah led a rebellion, and in leading that rebellion, the result of it that the earth swallowed him up, and many of his own. Now, this rebellion, to me, illustrates three disruptive spirits to an orderly society. When I say an orderly society, I mean any unit of society, whether it be in the home, or whether it be in the community, or whether it be in the church, for that matter. Any of these attitudes and spirits that's exhibited by Korah will disrupt, to say the least, and in some cases will destroy a society if they're not checked. Now, the first passage we'll notice in Numbers 16 will be in the first seven verses of the 16th chapter of Numbers, where we notice the spirit of insubordination. That's the first thing that we notice about Korah, that he was not willing to bow to the Lord, and much less bow to the priesthood of Aaron and his family. Notice in the first seven verses of number 16 now. Now Korah, the son of Isher, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi. Now Korah was the son of Isher, and Isher was a brother to Amram, who was the father of Moses and Aaron. But anyway, that's not the text, I just was making that comment. And it says in verse 2, and further in this verse though, the son of Levi, Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, son of Reuben, took men, and they rose up before Moses, and with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown, and they gathered themselves against Moses and against Aaron, and said unto them, you take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore then lift you up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord. You see what the accusation was? The accusation was, look, all the congregation is equal, all the congregation is holy, and you've lifted yourselves up above the rest of the congregation. Well, that wasn't true. Aaron and Moses had been given their position by the Lord, and it was not that they had lifted themselves up. But listen as it goes on. And when Moses heard it, he fell upon his face, and he spake unto Korah and unto all the company, saying, even tomorrow the Lord will show who are his, who is holy, and will cause him to come near unto him, even him whom he hath chosen will he cause to come near unto him. This do, take your censers, Korah and all his company, and put fire thereon, and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow, and it shall be, the man whom the Lord doth choose, he shall be holy. Ye take too much upon you, ye sons of Levi. So Korah says, basically to Aaron and to Moses, you exalted yourselves, and you've given too much power to yourselves. We're all holy, but all the congregation, you're no different from the congregation, and yet you've lifted yourselves up. But Moses said, well, we'll see, and we'll let the Lord point out who it is that has done that, and who is it that has lifted themselves up, and who it is that's taken too much upon themselves. And he says, and ye take too much upon you, ye sons of Levi. They were, all of these that he got to accompany him in the rebellion were all Levites, sons of Levi. And so they basically rebel against the order of the Lord that in appointing Aaron and Moses to their position. And Korah ben Akkosan evidently thought, well, look at that. There they are, lifted up. And that's kind of left us out of the thing. So they rebelled and showed their spirit in subordination. They did not submit themselves to God's appointment. And this rebellion was supported by influential men within the tribe of Levi in the first two verses again. Now, Kohath, the son of Issachar, and the names different ones. I'll not read all of it again. I read a moment ago. But when he gets down in verse 2, he says, and they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown. Men who were men of renown, outstanding men as far as how they looked at it. Among most prominent men, among the Levites, he got 250 of them to join him in the rebellion. And in all that, he demanded, basically, that they have equal rank with Moses and Aaron. And notice in verse 3, and they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron, and said unto them, ye take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore then lift you yourselves up above the congregation of the Lord. The thing that Korah didn't understand, and of course of his jealousy, I suspect was cause of it, he didn't understand that when you've got a nation or you've got a lot of people that number, somebody's got to lead and somebody's got to follow. Everybody can't be chief. Everybody can't be, as we used to, when we had sandlot baseball, you get out there to play the baseball, and you know what everybody wanted to be? Everybody wanted to be the pitcher. We get up a game of sandlot tag football, and everybody wanted to be the quarterback. And if you didn't get to be the quarterback, if you owned the ball, you took your ball and you went home. Well, that's what his attitude was. He was not going to place himself under the leadership of Moses, not the leadership of Aaron, because he thought he'd just as good as they were and had as good a rank as they did. And why should they be elevated up above them? Now, I wonder. You don't have to wonder long either. Wonder what would happen if Korah had been put in their position. What if Korah had been selected of the Lord and put in that position? Would he thought then he's lifting himself up above them? Of course not. But it was the Lord who had put Moses and Aaron in the position they were in, and Korah didn't like it, and so he rebelled against it. He showed his spirit of insubordination in that he did not want to bow to the authority of God, nor did he want to place himself in any way under the leadership of Moses and of Aaron. But that's not the last time that spirit of insubordination has arisen among people. There's that modern spirit that we see sometimes. Sometimes we'll reject God's order and God's rank and refuse to submit ourselves to what God's order is and what God's rank is for us. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, chapter 11 in verse 3, where the Apostle Paul says concerning men and women in the church, he said, I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. So you've got the order then of rank here. You've got God and Christ, but he says the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man. So God, in his wisdom, saw fit, and because of the fact that he said later, because that Eve first sinned and then Adam, he placed woman under the headship of man in general. And for that reason, later on we find that she has a more submissive role in the work of the church and all that. And the Women's Lib movement pushes forward the idea that it has to be equality. That be equality in rank, equality in every respect. Whereas God's order was that man is the head of a woman, just as Christ is head of the man. And when it comes to the marriage relationship, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. And when both the husband and the wife don't recognize God's order in the thing and try to change it, they're showing a spirit of insubordination. And when a wife will not submit to the leadership of her husband, she's showing a spirit of insubordination. And when it comes to the government in which we live, as bad as sometimes the things that are done by the government, that doesn't remove the responsibility on our part to be subject unto the powers that be. In Romans chapter 3:13 and verse 1, let every soul be subject to the higher powers, for there is no power but of God, the power that be ordained of God. And you know what? As bad as it is, and as aggravated as I get, and I do, and I think all of us do, that I get at the powers that be, at the things that they do and how they spend my money, and the in general, the power structure in Washington or in Montgomery or wherever it may be, aggravates me to death sometimes. But you stop and think about it, if we had no power structure at all, suppose that every man was a law unto himself, and nobody was subject to anybody else, and nobody was subject to law at all, and given the wickedness that there is in the world now, with no law to restrain it at all, would be a terrible thing to have. And God saw fit that the powers be ordained, and he told the Christians to submit to that power. And when we don't submit to that power, we show a spirit of insubordination. And in Matthew chapter 10:24, the disciple is not above his master, and the servant above his Lord. That's just the way the structure is. The master, or the teacher, the disciple is not above the teacher. The disciple is subject to the teacher, of course. And the servant is subject to his Lord. And again, that order is to be respected. And we're not to have a spirit of insubordination and try to not submit ourselves to those that have the right to be over us. And it's even true in the church when it comes to elders. And we recognize that at times the church does not have elders. Those in Acts chapter 14, at least for some time, existed after the congregation was started without elders until Paul came through and Barnabas and others and ordained them elders in every city. Timothy later on was ordaining elders and so on. But when a congregation has elders, we are to submit. And of course, all these submissions have to be in harmony with God's law. And we are never to submit to any man's authority above the Lord's authority. So keep that in mind. But anyway, the elders which are among you I exhort, also an elder, a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also protector of the glory should be revealed. He tells what the elders are what to do. They to feed the flock which is among you, take the oversight thereof, not but constrained but wittily, not for filthy lucre but of ready mind. Neither be ye lords over God's heritage. They were not to abuse their authority. He says you're not to be his lords over God's heritage, but you're to be examples to the flock. They were to be more of a, their authority was more accompanied with being the leaders and examples that they were being dictatorial commandment givers. But anyway, they're not to be the lords over God's heritage, but to be an example to the flock. That's the spirit in which they lead, are to rule. But he says, when the chief shepherd shall appear, ye shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away. Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Ye all of you be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Now that spirit of subordination is a part of humility. And we're to submit to the older, or the elder here, he says, and all of you be submitted one to the other. That is, give deference to one another is the idea. But when we're proud and arrogant, we're not going to submit our will, we're not going to submit our opinion, we're not going to submit anything to others. We always, it's my way or your, no way or the highway. Well, Korah kind of had that idea. He kind of had, I want it my way. The Lord has set forth who he wanted to lead Israel. He wanted Moses to lead them as far as lead them out of bondage, and he wanted Aaron to lead them in the priesthood. And he wasn't satisfied with that, so he showed that spirit of insubordination and caused problems. So that spirit will disrupt all of God's ordained units of society. In the home, if those who are to be in submission, like the wife to the husband or the children to the parents, when that doesn't happen, they always cause problems. And in the state, or in the government, when people do not submit to the government, do not obey the laws of the land, they always cause problems. It always causes problems. And the same is in the church. When people have that spirit of insubordination, They will not bow to the will of God or to the will of Christ. And when they won't submit to those who are over them in the Lord as the eldership, bear in mind again that it has to be in harmony with God's will. But when you don't have any order like that, it always causes problems. Always has and always will. The second spirit that we notice in Korah's rebellion was the spirit of ingratitude. We want to notice first his ingratitude is expressed in Numbers 16, 8 through 10. He didn't appreciate what God had done for him. He did not appreciate the blessings that had come his way by the hand of the Lord, and had really come his way by the Lord's order of authority or order of power. Notice in verse 8, and Moses said unto Korah, "Here I pray you, ye sons of Levi, since it is but a small thing unto you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to minister to them. And he hath brought thee near to him, and all thy brethren, the sons of Levi, with thee, and seek ye the priesthood also." Now what is he telling him? He's telling him, listen, think about it. The Lord has made you as a tribe of people. He was a Kohathite who was a descendant of Levi. But God had made the Kohathite branch of Levi's descendants, had brought them close to himself and gave them special honor to have service in the tabernacle. But that wasn't enough. They wanted more. And he says, seek ye the priesthood also. Whether they realized it or not, they were showing ingratitude for what God had done. They were so wrapped up in what they wanted, they were wrapped up in what they desired for themselves, that they couldn't appreciate what God had done for them. God had lifted them above the rest of the Israelites. Not only did he lifted them above the rest of the Israelites, he had also lifted them above the rest of the Levites, in that he had made them particular, as Kohathites, had made them particularly close to him by their ministering to the things of the tabernacle, and later it would be to the temple. And instead of appreciating it, they allowed their envy and their jealousy of Aaron and Moses to blind them to the truth, to blind them to the blessings they really had. Notice in verse 10 again. And he hath brought thee near to him, and all thy brethren, the sons of Levi, with thee. Seek ye the priesthood. No expression of gratitude to God for what he had done for him, but anger over what God had not done for him. God had not made them leaders as Moses was leader, or as Aaron was leader, but he done a lot for them. And so many times we don't appreciate what God has done for us because we're so envious of what he may have done for somebody else that we don't have time to appreciate and don't have the mind to appreciate what all he's done for us. And ingratitude is one of the first signs of ungodliness that you read in the scriptures. Notice in Romans chapter 1 and verse 21, when he talks about the Gentile people, and when they left the Lord and went toward idolatry, it says in verse 21, talking about the very first steps that they took, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were they thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. They glorified him not as God, neither were thankful. They did not glorify him, and they showed ingratitude. And by not being thankful, they drifted further on down into terrible sins, finally of adultery and immorality that went with it. And in 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1, he says, know ye also that in the last times, perilous times will come, and among those things that he said, that there will be those who were unthankful. That is, they didn't have gratitude. We often don't appreciate what we have because the envy or the greed for something more or something different. And that's really sometimes hard for us to not do, but something we must learn to do. And if we sit around all the time envying what someone else has got, that we, and jealous of them because of what prosperity they have, or what talents they have, we're not going to use our own talents, and we're not going to use whatever prosperity God has given us, because we are so wrapped up in the idea that we want theirs that we fail to show gratitude for what we do have. And all of us, if we just would look at what we do have, give God the glory and give God the thanks, and not rebel basically against what God's providence has been towards somebody else, we'll be much happier and we'll be much better servants of the Lord on a day-to-day basis. And thirdly, there was a spirit of murmuring. Or as some translations have it, the spirit of grumbling. We all know what the spirit of grumbling is. I think we do. You've seen people. Of course, I've never been guilty of it. You've never been guilty of it. But you've seen people that no matter how things are going, they always are grumbling about it. You never say a word to them, and they have a positive word that comes back. They're either grumbling about themselves, things that happened to them. They're grumbling about what somebody else did. They're grumbling about how things ought to be, and without even appreciating at all how things are, and always a mumbling and a grumbling and about everything. And that's not a pleasant environment to be in. You know, I was told a number of times what I had to do as a youngster when I was growing up. You go do this and you go do that. Well, I always did it. Because I pretty much knew if I didn't, it'd be Katie bar the door. But a lot of times I'd walk off, and under my an undertone in my voice, I'd grumble all the way there and all the way back for having to do it. Well, I made it a lot easier on myself. I just went ahead and done it. But the grumbling and the mumbling about it creates a bad atmosphere for yourself and for others. And in this case, those who were in the rebellion of Korah, they murmured, it says. Notice in Numbers 16:11. For which cause both thou and all thy company are gathered together against the Lord, and what is Aaron, and that you murmur against him. And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram and the sons of Eliab, and he said, we will not come up. It is a small thing that thou hast brought us up out of the land that floweth with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, except thou make thyself altogether a prince over us. Now look at the grumbling. Look, they say, it is a small thing that you brought us out of the land of a land that flows with milk and honey. Were they talking about Canaan? No. They were talking about back in Egypt. Now, when they were back in Egypt, they weren't too happy with the situation back there. They were in slavery. But they said, it's a small thing if you brought us out of a land that flows with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness. You just brought us out here and you're going to let us die. And besides that, they said, except thou make thyself altogether a prince over us. Moreover, thou hast not brought us into a land that floweth with milk and honey course, they hadn't got there yet. Are given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Wilt thou put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. Grumbling, mumbling, and grumbling. They said, listen, you brought us out of the land that flowed with milk and honey, a prosperous land with every slaves in it. But now you brought us over here, and now you brought us over here to die. And besides that, you've set yourself up as a prince over us, grumbling and mumbling. No appreciation for the fact that Moses had led them out of that bondage. All they could see was right at the end of their nose. They couldn't see anything beyond that. The immediate conference is all they were concerned about. And they couldn't wait in due time for them to get into the promised land. So they murmured, and then all the congregation murmured in number 16. That on the morrow, all the congregation of the children of Israel, 16 and 41, all the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, you killed the people of the Lord. That's after the Lord had done his job on Korah and his family, and the earth had swallowed up. The whole congregation said, you killed the people of the Lord. And it came to pass when the congregation was gathered against Moses and against Aaron, that they looked toward the tabernacle of the congregation, beheld the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. And Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of the congregation. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, get you up from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. And they fell upon their faces. The Lord basically said to Moses, listen, Moses, just step aside, get out of the way. And I'm going to do this congregation in. And of course, we know this later story that Moses interceded on their behalf, and God didn't destroy Israel, but he was on the verge of it. Because they're murmuring, they could not be satisfied, and weren't satisfied. Anything that Moses did, and anything that God had done for them, they were not satisfied with. They wanted more. They wanted different. And grumble and mumble about it all the time. And sometimes you get people in the congregations that do that. I was in the greater Mississippi. That's been far long enough ago and far enough away, I can tell this story, and I think it illustrates what I'm talking about, because you'd not know the people involved at all. But there was a man in the congregation when I lived there that I could count on Monday morning. My study was in the church building then, and we had a fairly good-sized congregation. And I was always, and my house was down the street. And I always went up to my office about 7 o'clock, sometimes earlier. But I count on a peck on my door on Monday morning about 8 o'clock. I knew it. I could told you the man, who it was without even looking. And he'd come in, and he'd sit down, and he'd grumble about something about the service the day before. Then he'd grumble about some things about the elders, and then he'd grumble about some about the deacons, and then he'd grumble some about other members of the church, and it just went that circle week after week, and trying to pacify him. And I finally, after a while, I didn't even talk to the elders about it. So after a while, I did tell the elders what was happening every Monday morning. One of the elders told me, he said, listen, said, we know him. And said, next time, when he comes in, he starts, said, you tell him. And every time, he always ended with a threat to leave and go somewhere else if he didn't get his the changes he made, wanted made. And they're always trivial things. And so one of the elders told me, said, listen, next time he does that, and he threatens to leave, you tell him, be sure to not slam the door as he exits. Well, I was young and didn't know any better, and I didn't have more sense. And the next time he came in and he started that, and then when he got down to his point, which he always did, if this doesn't happen, if that doesn't happen, I'm going to leave. I said, I'm going to quote directly what one of the elders told me to tell you. Don't slam the door when you leave. Well, he left, and he didn't slam. The first Sunday I was away from there, I understand he came back and they had to continue to deal with him after that and with the same stuff. But anyway, the point I'm making is that sometimes there are folks that just mumble and grumble and all the time got something that they are grumbling about. And if that's the case, then sometimes a church is better off without them than they are with them. But all of us, I don't care who we are, there are times, of course, when there are things that need to be pointed out. Nobody has anything against that. And sometimes there's legitimate criticism. Nobody has anything about that. But when a person is constantly, always, forever, always something to grumble about, then there's something wrong with that person. And there's a spirit of murmuring, a spirit of grumbling that they need to work on, because they're not doing themselves any favor and they're not doing those around them any favor. But it was a perpetual problem with Israel. When it came that time that the water got a little bit short, what did they do? They started murmuring. And it caused Moses to get fed up with it. And on one occasion, he got so fed up with it that he, in his haste, rather than speaking to the rock, he struck the rock, and it finally caused Moses to not see the land of Canaan. But it says in Exodus 15 and 24, and the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And then in 16 and 2 here, Exodus, not Numbers this time, 16 and 2, Exodus 16 and 2, and the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the people thirsted for water, Exodus 17:3. And the people murmured against Moses. And wherefore is all that thou hast brought us, wherefore is this that thou hast brought us out of Egypt, to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst? But we have a warning in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured, and was destroyed of the destroyer. And the Jews were murmurers as well in Jesus' time. You remember the case in Matthew 11 when Jesus wanted to know what he's like in that generation. They said, "We pipe and you have not danced." She said, "You're like children playing in the streets. We piped and you have not danced. We mourned and you have not lamented." Then John came eating and drinking, and they say he has a devil. The Son of Man comes eating and drinking, and you say that he's a bloodless man, a wine bibber, a friend of publicans and sinners. But wisdom is justified by her children. With a murmur, you can hardly ever get it right. Because most of the time, if they're not murmuring about one thing, they're murmuring about another. And that's the case here. When John came along and did one thing, or didn't do one thing, eating and drink, they says he has a devil. Jesus came along and he did exactly the opposite of what John did, and they said, "No, he's a blind bibber and a gutless man. You couldn't satisfy him either, any way you went." Like Martin was when he was about, I don't know what the age was, but he was just talking good. And he was over there, he's "Want, I want, I want." And finally his mama said, "What do you want?" He said, "I want to want." People want this, that, they're murmuring about something all the time. Well, we ought not to get in that sort of habit. And that was true, of course, of the false brethren that Jude talked about, where we began our study. These are murmurers, complainers, walking after all lust, and their mouths speak of great swelling words, having men's persons in admiration because of the advantage. Murmurers and complainers, walking after their own lust. So, to quote rebel. And we have to be sure that we don't rebel against God. We not to rebel against His order, or His will, or His blessings, or His promise by which He's blessed us. And we ought to always submit to His will and do it without murmuring. In Philippians chapter 2, he says, concerning obeying, "Wherefore, my beloved, ye have always obeyed, not in my presence only, but much more in my absence. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God that worketh in you both to will and do of His good pleasure." do all things without murmurings and disputings. The all things in the context would be that obedience. They do it without murmuring and disputings. So the rebellion of Korah leaves a lot for us to learn about the way that we live our lives while we are living among men, especially among our brothers and sisters in Christ. And I'll have to say this in closing on this. So far, and I've been here a pretty good while, so far I haven't found that here. And I just hope we don't find it here. They're not saying we're perfect. They're kind of like the fellow was. No one perfect but my wife's first husband. But nobody is perfect. We all have faults. But what I'm talking about, when we allow these things to get into a spirit that characterizes us and we become a spirit of murmur, in the spirit of murmuring and rebellion and all that, that's when it becomes dangerous. So, but you're here tonight anyway, except the Lord's invitation. Come while we stand, while we sing.